As usual, we welcome you to our service today. I hope that you feel comfortable here. It's a bit of a challenge to get here with the way Britton Road is these days. I've had several people mention to me that it is a problem, and I think it probably affects our attendance to some degree. I understand it's going to be completed by the end of the year, but you know how these projects go. We'll have to see how it really turns out. Before I start this morning, I would like to thank you for your response to the passing of Joyce, Terry's mom. We've gotten dozens of cards, flowers, texts, calls. We appreciate so much the attendance of many of you at the memorial last Saturday, and acts of kindness are just too numerable to even mention. You've been a great encouragement to Terry and the rest of our extended family. But most of all, I thank you for loving her for the last 17 years. And I know to some of you would say that was easy to do, and she was very much a part of this church family, and she gave love and accepted love, and that was a very positive thing. But a number of you, in recent years especially, have been very, very special giving servants, and we thank you. I'd love to be able to mention names specifically, but in the fear of leaving just one person out, I'm going to not do that. Over the last year, there were several times when it really made sense that she ceased coming to church. In fact, we even made that decision a couple of times that she just didn't want to do that. She wanted to be here, and as you know, was here, especially on Wednesday night, right up until just a couple of months ago. She wanted to gather with the saints, but she also wanted to give and share love. And the love that you gave is just so beautiful to acknowledge. And we just thank you so very much. It's springtime. And maybe some of you know the origin of this. If you do, tell me after church. It's springtime and the grass is riz. And then there's this little thing that goes on after a little birdie on the wing. And no, the wing's on the bird. And it's kind of a crazy little thing. But I can remember hearing older people talk about and use that expression over and over. When I think of springtime and spring fever, I hope you can read that because I can't. So I can't read it for you. I could get a few of the words, but it's by Mark Twain. I think of Elvis Presley had a song called Spring Fever. That I remember Bobby Goldsboro and the spring of your life, my life, you came to me, and a song called Autumn of My Life. And we look around the world at our world, and it just, like I was mentioning earlier, it's just something that kind of lifts your spirits. As the grass greens and as the flowers bloom and the trees, everything just kind of picks you up as you think about the fact that there's this seasonal thing that's happening, and all the world is literally excited by that. And what that reminds me of, especially springtime, is the seasons of life. The world experiences four distinct seasons. But in our lives, we experience distinct seasons as well. And I think they very much parallel these four seasons that occur in God's world. God made these seasons of life. And we experience them in very similar ways. And I think it might be useful to think about that this morning. And that's why I'd like for us to share together. Begin in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, rather, verse 1. The introduction to a very famous passage. There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. God has this plan for seasons. And then if you jump down 10 verses to verse 11... He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. Everything beautiful in its own time. And that chronology is critical. Sometimes things happen out of time. As I mentioned this morning in reflecting on Joyce, one of the critical things about loss is does it happen in the natural order? Sure, it's very sad when someone has lived out their days, but they've gone on to heaven. They've gone on to be with God. They've been gathered to their people. What is especially painful are those deaths that occur outside of the natural order, especially children. And so we live with this natural order, and it gives us encouragement, and it certainly gives us strength. We have springtime in our lives, and for the sake of what we're going to do this morning, I'm going to kind of define these things, and I know that there would be some debate about these various sections, but this is just the operational definition that I'm giving them today. And I would call this the time from birth until the time where you actually have children of your own. When you grow up, you go through adolescence, many people get married and maybe have that period of time in marriage before they actually have children, and this is that springtime. And spring is new and exciting and it's wonderful and idealistic. And spring is a time for preparation, being prepared for the rest of life. And sometimes when you say that to people who are in that period of life, they can be a little bit offended by that. No, I have things to offer right now. Well, certainly you do. And they have many things to offer right now. But the key to that period is being prepared for what's coming later on. When I was in youth ministry, I've mentioned this in Bible class. I don't think I've ever mentioned this in public from the pulpit. But we used to go to these programs, and there was a mission organization that would come and attend these various activities, and they would try to recruit college students out of the middle of their college education. Their idea was leave college after your sophomore year, spend 2 years in the mission field, and come back for your junior and senior year. It sounds like a great idea. But you can automatically see what the problem is. There were kids who weren't coming back for their junior year. They were getting in the mission field and they were staying there. And so that became a bit of a problem. Now, there were some people that were happy with that. But there were other people who looked at this preparation process as being very, very critical. Sometimes when we're young, we want to say, oh, I want to be doing something right now. Well, there are things to do right now. There are ways to touch lives. There are ways to have influence. But preparing for the future is an incredible part of that process as well. Ecclesiastes verse 12. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come, and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. Make that commitment to God. Build that foundation. Get it there firmly and securely as the thing that's going to hold up the rest of your life. And before you know it, it's summertime. And I'm going to define that as the period of raising children. And I want to say to you, if you are in that period of life, God bless you. That's a hard time. It really is. As I look back on my life, the hardest period of time was raising children. Not that children were all that difficult to raise, but there was, I shouldn't say that. It's a task. Let's put it that way. But there's so many things going on. There's so many challenges. It's the most difficult financially. It's the most difficult time-wise. It seems like there's just constantly things that are going wrong. You know, you buy those glasses and they leave them at school the first day, never to be seen again. Those things that you really couldn't afford, those new shoes that are torn up in a week's time. And just all the frustrations that go there. I can remember a time when our boys were playing sports. I think it was soccer season. It was in the springtime and It wasn't time to do everything. In the morning, we'd gone to the soccer field, and then in the afternoon, I was trying to get the yard done so that we could move on to the next things. And the boys were going to have a big water fight, a water balloon fight with some kids in the neighborhood. And so they had spent a long period of time filling up enough water balloons to fill up one of those tubs, those wash tubs. And this is back when you had to do each one. Now they have that really neat deal. You know, you can make 100 at a time. That's a lot of fun. But the water fight fell apart, you know, about the time all the balloons were made. Jonathan came around the corner of the house, and I'm weed eating. And he said, Dad, is it okay if we throw water balloons at you while you work? It'll cool you down. And I thought, boy, that's just terrible. You know, I mean, I hear, and that just to me was kind of an emphasis of how busy life was. There wasn't time to do anything else. And if you're in that period right now, hang on. It's going to get better. It really does get better. Sometimes when you say that to people, they go, oh, I don't think so. You know, spring was pretty good, and now summer's gotten worse. I think fall and winter are going to be. No, they're not either. Summer is the hardest time. And sometimes knowing that it's the hardest part can be useful and helpful. Jeremiah chapter 8, verse 7. It says, even the stork in the sky knows her appointed seasons, and the dove, the swift, and the thrush observe their time of their migration. But my people do not know the requirements of the Lord. If we know what God expects of us, if we know what's going on in other people's lives, and I think that can be useful and really encouraging to us. The third period, obviously, is autumn or fall. This is the time when the kids have left home and you have what we sometimes refer to as the empty nest syndrome. Terry and I experienced about 7 seconds of empty nest syndrome. When Jonathan went to college in 1998, he packed up all his stuff on a Saturday morning, loaded it up in his car. We stood in the driveway and said, see ya, you know, and he drove out. He passed Jack and Joyce as they came to live at our house for 4 or 5 months while their home was being finished, and then moved across the street. So the empty nest syndrome for us was kind of that period of time, and we feel it a little bit at this point in time. You see people that do amazing things during this period of life, though. They have frequently a lot of stability emotionally, a lot of stability financially. Some of them get a lot of time. I don't know if this organization is still out there or not. Some of you may know a group called the Sojourners. At Guthrie, there was a number of people who were members of the Sojourners, and we even had Sojourners come and help us. Retired people who banded together, took their RVs out, and just worked in various congregations. And they had wonderful fellowship and great encouragement as they were really utilizing what they would have described as their golden years. And then last but not least, winter is coming. We're not talking about the TV show. All of us know that winter comes in our lives. Now, unless our lives end in some fashion early, we're going to get to that place where we experience winter. You can go to 2 Timothy chapter 4, and I'm not going to do it today, I don't have time. But you can look in especially the last half of that chapter, and you can see Paul as he experiences winter. There are things that he needs. There are things that he wants. There are people that he wants to see. There are people who have disappointed him and hurt him and wounded him. And he just kind of presents a classic image of what winter can really be in our lives. He says to Timothy right before that, in verse 2 of that chapter, preach the word, be prepared in season and out of season, whatever's going on. Correct, rebuke, and encourage with great patience and careful instruction. I do want to mention Joyce here. In the winter of her life, she was at an assisted living place. And when she went there, I really wasn't sure about what all would take place. But it was amazing that she found ministry in that situation. She found opportunities to encourage. She had found opportunities to help. People return those things to her. And just because we're into winter doesn't mean that we've lost our ability or we're past our ability or our time to be useful to God. Well, let me make 3 quick applications. I know I'm way behind, but I want to try to do this quickly. First of all, it's God's purpose for us changes as the seasons change. We talked about this in a Wednesday night class, and this is really where the whole idea for this lesson came. We were talking about purpose and how God had a purpose for us. And one of the men who was in the class made the point in class, and we talked more about it afterwards. As you look, though, God's purpose for you changes depending on what season you're in. And that's very useful, and that's very, very beneficial. When Moses, according to Acts chapter 7, when Moses was 40 years old, he just knew that the Hebrews would rally behind him and start a revolt. He just knew that God was going to give him the opportunity to be the leader of the Israelites as they were able to get out of Egypt. He was wrong. He killed the Egyptian, and the result of that is he had to flee to Midian. But lo and behold, 40 years later, God comes to him and says, guess what? You're 80. It's time. Now is the season that I had in mind. This is the time that I'm going to give you to lead his people. And by then, Moses is tired and he's weary. He doesn't think he can do it anymore. And yet God leads him and directs him in causing that to be exactly what is done. I love to play tennis. In my 40s, my serve just deteriorated and vanished completely. And so I decided I was going to take some tennis lessons and see if somebody could help me. I went down to Kicking Bird, took some lessons from a guy by the name of something, I'm going to call him Rowdy, because that was kind of his name. It was something like that. This guy's about 20 years old and reminds you of the quintessential surfer. I don't know how he wound up in Oklahoma, but I got the feeling he was just trying to get enough money together to get back to an ocean. And he was just teaching a few tennis lessons as we went on. I explained to him what my problem was. We got out there on the court, and he said, well, just serve some. So I served about a dozen. He said, man, I see your problem. You got a twist. And to do have a twist, you got to be flexible, and you're not flexible anymore. And I just kind of stood there. I didn't really say anything. And he was afraid that I hadn't really gotten the point, and he said, you're an old man, dude. That's actually what he said. And you got to learn to play like an old man. And I was a little bit offended by that, especially thinking that was 20 years ago. But he was right. My oral surgeon, who's in his late 30s, is a little more sophisticated. And he says, when we reach a certain age, which is exactly the same thing that Rowdy was saying. But the reality is, and if we were to have a group discussion, I know many of you would say to me, as I say, I can't do the things I used to do. I wish that I could. I wish that I could do certain physical things. And yet I find myself in places where there are other things that I do better than I did before. And so instead of looking and saying, why am I at this stage? There's a blessing to being at this stage. And there's also an opportunity. Second quick application is that the seasons of life are normal. When I was studying about the seasons of life, so many people wanted to break seasons down into occurrences, you know, the season of waiting, the season of grinding, the seasons of trial, the seasons of joy, the seasons of transition, grief, conflict, illness, all of those. And we will experience those seasons in our lives. But I'm not talking about this morning. I'm talking about that overarching chronological umbrella that we all go through. And it's relatively similar, not exactly, it's relatively similar. And when we understand that as normal, and when we understand that as being God's will for us, this is God's will for me today, to be in the season I am in. And I want to use that to the best of my ability. The third thing I want to point out quickly is it's not up to us to judge how somebody else is functioning in their season. You know, you see somebody get out of a handicapped parking space, and sometimes you'll even hear people say, well, I wonder what's wrong with them, you know. We don't know. They may have a heart condition, and they can't walk very far. They may have any number of things, and it's so easy to become judgmental. Romans chapter 14, verse 4 asks the simple question, who are you to judge someone else's servant? To their own master, servants stand or fall. And they will stand, for the Lord is able to make them stand. When we look around and say, well, other people aren't handling their season as well as, that's really not for us to do. Because we don't know all of what they've experienced. We don't know all of what complicates their life at that particular point. One last verse. Psalms chapter 1, verse 3. That person is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yield its fruit in season and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever they do prospers. It's the tree for all seasons. It's the tree that survives the dry spell. It's the tree that survives the storm. It's the tree that continues to produce fruit. It's the tree that continues to produce shade. And I honestly believe that as we look, most of us want to be that tree. That's our goal. And as we deal with the ever-changing seasons of life, our desire is that God would let us be that tree. And the way we do that is to stay connected to Him, to live within the context of His will. This morning, if you're outside of His will, if there's some way that we can help you in that, if there's something you need to do personally or privately, we would encourage you to do that. But if there's something we can help you with, Please let us know while we sing the song of encouragement together.